Bonjour, bonjour, bonjour. Welcome to the SBS Cycling Podcast. I'm Christophe Mallet. I'm your host. And joining me is Grace Bond. How are you, Grace?
I'm good, yes.
It's been an important week and important for us as well because the prodigy son is here. He's back. Dave McKenzie is back in the studio. We feel humble.
don't be humble at all. I literally had to, by the way, roll myself through the doors. Too much tiramisu, too much pasta, pizza, and
stop it.
Of course, you know I do like a nice drop of the red stuff. So, I'm very... I went on a cycling trip, generally to get fitter. It went the opposite direction.
That's what you're those two.
Come on, Mackie. You're always the same. Like, I don't think you've ever looked different in the time I've known
you. Have you ever gained a grub?
Oh, no. I'm 8-9 kilos heavier than my race weight. Bear in mind, that's 25 years
ago. Yeah, you retired 25 years. It's what, 200 grams a year?
Not bad. I'd take it, you reckon?
Yeah. I got 200 grams yesterday.
I've missed you both anyway, so it is nice to be back.
Yeah, we held a fort, and we had good fun. It was a good part.
Not too much,
the
I
season.
Hope.
Yeah, we proved that we don't need you. Exactly. But it is nice. It is nice to have you.
Has it taken you this long to prove it?
No. Anyway, there's been a fair bit of cycling happening, and of course, just recently the European Championships were held in France in the Drôme region with a winner. We can say Tadej Pogacar won for the men, for the women. Demi Vollering finally winning a title because she never been world champion. She's never been European champion on her own. That's how important is that jersey, this win, this particular win for her?
Yeah, I think, and definitely this year, she's not had like a standout year at all. Like there was just one period with the Spanish tours in around May, April, May that she was winning. But other than that, she's been on the podium and not really getting
A lot of second places.
Yeah. So I think it's nice for her to round out the year with this victory and like actually have that good feeling that she is one of the top riders rather than just like that deflated disappointment.
How important is it for FDJ? Same thing. We talked about it in a few podcasts ago that they invested a lot in her financially and man and woman power and so on and so on, but to clap the end of the year with a jersey.
Yeah, I think it's probably not the jersey that they were after.
They're a week too late on this one.
Yeah, I think like the return on investment hasn't been so good just yet in terms of victories from Demi, but yeah, I think like it's hard. You know, the transition from SD Works to FDJ, a very different environment. And I did actually wonder, like, the fact that she got this win when she's back on the Dutch team, a bit more of that, like, hard-ass sort of culture, whether that's what she needs to perform and the French may be a little bit too soft on her.
Yeah. Do they have a lot to learn?
Well, that's interesting. I forgot that it's... national teams, of course, at the Europeans. So that's an interesting point you make there. Is that the case, do you think?
Possibly. Like,
The Dutch are dominant.
There's a few riders that we've seen come off SD Works and really not perform at the same level, Demi being one of them, Neve Fischer-Black another. Like, they've performed well, but not at the same level that they did when they were on SD Works. And you do wonder whether it's like, even though that really high performance, like harsh environment isn't really great for mental health, for some riders it does help them perform.
And the irony is the French person that won this year won it on the Dutch team, Visma, as well. So that's also another culture that is very... You know, quite strong as well. We know this. Let's talk about on the road, though. That attack was sharp. And the way she actually won that championship, there is no contest.
Yeah, she went to the back. She'd been on the front driving it. And then Anna van der Breggen took over and she just sort of went to the back and then did a blistering attack on the climb. And basically no one could follow her, I think. Elisa Longo-Borghini tried for a little bit and then just blew And then it was just Cassie Nuodoma sort of chasing with Anna van der Breggen politely sitting on her wheel.
And of almost 40Ks solo. Question I've got about the Europeans, and then this will lead into another sort of discussion. Is it, should they be in earlier time in the year, the Europeans? I know it's hard because the calendar's chockers with bike races. As in, does it lose a little bit of its shine being this time of the year?
I think everything loses its shine after the World Championships.
Yeah.
Like, it's just...
But should it be before, though? Because if you want to be... and it's not the case actually for both winners. So my point is actually wrong. But there's a fair number of riders, i.e. Vingegaard, for example, that have passed on the World Championship, but we're looking at the European Championship as another event. But if it's reversed, if the Europeans are before, would you get a better crowd in some, so to speak, for riders?
I think it depends what other races are on at the same time. Like, yeah, I think it doesn't make that much difference, but definitely, I mean, in total, I feel like the World Championships should just be the end of the season. Like the rest of the October racing, like people, fans lose interest.
They're more kermesse, you
know? And also riders lose interest. Like I was always ready to hang up my boots after the World Championships, and it was just like you sort of just had to like drag yourself along to the last couple of races.
Yeah, and this was leads us into what I wanted to bring up as well. It's interesting. I don't know why I've sort of got this in my head, but Lombardia, for the men at least, there isn't a women's version yet. Let's hope there is, you know, sooner rather than later in the coming years. It's the final monument of the year. It's the race of the falling leaves. 11th of October. That's late, isn't it? I suddenly just feel like it's so late.
It's still not going to stop Pogacar to win it.
What's that, sorry?
It's not going to stop Pogacar to win it.
No, exactly. You're right. I think he'll win hands down already. But is our calendar, you know, too long? I mean, it's been long for years. It never used to be this long, though. Years ago, back in the 80s and maybe early 90s, but certainly 80s, it wasn't this long. Is it too long, and does that shine wear off a lot of these races? But then, and I guess my question to that, how do we fit these races in the current calendar? Do we need to scrap some bike races throughout the season to make way for the bigger ones?
Well, I think, you know, now next year there's some rule changes about like really sort of the continental level teams won't be able to do world tour. I think maybe this was already the case in the men's, but it's becoming much more distinct that world tour teams and like the levels are going to have their own races.
So they won't be emerging per se
as much. Like world tour can only race down one level and Conti can only race up one level and the pro series can sort of go up and down, which I think will help just having a bit more, you know, distinct tiers in the racing. But, yeah, because you do need a certain number of lower-level races to cater for the lower-level teams. But if the World Tour teams are doing all of them, then it's, like, just a bit too much. So
maybe that's the answer. Maybe that, because I guess in some ways for the economy of the sport, and if we've got these sponsors and races, Tour de Guangxi, is it in China, which is even after Lombardia, we don't want to lose them. As in, if they want to give, they come to cycling and say, hey, here's $2 million to, or whatever, it'd be more than that, in fact.
Yeah.
But yeah, maybe it needs to be a separate, you know, calendar that the World Tour teams and riders do not do at all.
Well, Guangxi is the World Tour.
Is it?
Yes.
Is it? Okay.
Is it? Well, that sort of adds fuel to the debate because we don't even know.
Weird.
Well, I didn't know it was World Tour.
Yeah.
Women's as well?
Yep.
Okay, so men and women. See, look at that. I know nothing.
Yeah, I think they
too
need
much
to.
Yeah.
They need to sort of have a limit on. Because at the moment, they're just adding more and more races up to the World Tour, but there should be a limit of like the race days on the World Tour calendar, because it's not infinite, really, the number that can be there.
Yeah. I've got the solution. Because it's a debate that happens in football. It's a debate that happens in tennis. Formula One
football,
is...
Football, especially.
Football is a massive one. When you look at some of the players that are... basically didn't stop over summer. Just didn't stop. They just carried on.
Their problem's way worse than cycling,
absolutely. We'll come back to Il Lombardia in a second for the prospect of the race. But if I tell you Marta Bastianelli, do you know what she achieved?
She won the Europeans.
Yeah. She's the only non-Dutch woman to have won the European in the history of the Europeans.
Yeah,
in the history.
About 10 years. They've been the new
format. The women's.
The women's.
Yeah.
Yeah, they've been going on for 10 years, 9 Dutch winners and 1 Italian.
No. Wow.
90% Dutch wins on this one.
Wow.
Quite a good strike
rate. That's not bad. That's a nice stat. That's a nice stat.
Let's talk about the men's now. Tadej Pogacar. How do you stop Tadej Pogacar from winning? The words of Remco Evenepoel after the race were, is impossible to beat. He said, I finished second and it's the best I could do today. He's just, the thing is, he's predictable and you can't beat him.
Can I get both your opinions? Mm-hmm. Obviously, I wasn't here for the post-Worlds pod, and this is around Remco.
Yeah.
His reaction immediately, I don't know if either of you saw it, at the Road Worlds.
Yeah.
And then the comment about his seat slipping and the comparison to the Europeans. Was he just... Frustrated at the Worlds? But and was he better at the Europeans in terms of dealing with defeat?
Well, totally, because he got beaten on the saddle at the European. He had no problem. And he also... he was in a group with other riders, including Paul Sexas.
Yeah.
And then basically... Pog just went, I think it's like 76 or 75K to go. It's the second longest win he's had. And he just went, boom, done. And then Remco tried to follow, but he said the climb was too long. Couldn't follow.
The climb's fault.
Yeah. Where at the Worlds, he was complaining about the seat. And I read a few things where apparently the mechanics and stuff were saying the bike is there exactly was the same. And they went down, the Belgium team, they went down to say maybe it's the wear and tear on the saddle. That was some of the saddle were not new and used.
Yeah.
And the wear and tear could make that extra difference.
It got inside his head.
Yeah, just a bit.
He completely. The strange thing, and sorry to go back because I know you guys debriefed post-Worlds, but the fact that he actually got himself together at the Worlds and then carried on to have a great, still a great performance.
Finished silver.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. It's still a huge performance. It speaks, I don't know, volumes of what was going on in his head that day. But, Grace, the mental capacity that goes on, whether it be male, female, athletes, at any level in any sport, when your head falls off, generally it's capitulation. He didn't fully capitulate that
but
day.
But some people can ride on anger like it's fuel, and others it's wasted energy. So maybe for Remco, the anger was like helping him in a way. But, both races he was able to... even though he got beaten fair and square, he was able to actually contain the gap that Pogacar had on him.
He was a minute.
Yes.
Give or take a minute. And he basically matched Pogacar on his speed. He just could not match the attack. He just could not go with the attack. Actually, quick question on the mental aspect for someone like Remco. What can Red Bull and Bora do for him next year that Soudal couldn't?
Well, I think he did make a comment actually after Europeans, like, well, this is my new team's problem now to solve. Like, his new trainer's got some work to do.
That's so cool.
I don't know. Like, obviously Remco has very high ambitions to lift to that level to actually beat Pogacar. And maybe I think it's good that he sees there's capacity there. He's just not quite sure how to do it.
I've got a question for you here. It's more physical than more than mentally, but he concentrated on the time trial. You're a time trialist. Did he gain too much muscle? Did he gain too much force that didn't help him where he got attacked, which was basically the two climbs? The major climb in Kigali and major climb in the Europeans. This is where he, inverted comma, lost the race.
Yeah, I do think, like, I always found when I was focusing on a championship time trial that I found it really hard to perform in the road race. He's obviously managed it pretty well.
Yeah, super buff time.
Those, like, really high-intensity attack efforts are super hard when you've been doing a lot of time trial training.
Okay.
So, yeah, potentially if he wants to compete with Pogacar, he needs to sacrifice his time trial.
Yeah. Okay. Mm. That's a big one. That's a big one.
He wants to go for the record next year. So.
and this is Pog's weapon, isn't it?
Yeah.
He might not win every TT, but he's going to lose minimum to his rivals. He'll climb with the very best and drop them.
Yeah.
He'll be in the front group on the splits, on the crosswinds.
He doesn't need to compromise much.
Yeah.
No, he doesn't, does he? No.
Okay, we take a short break, and when we come back, we talk about how do we beat Pogacar? I think that's the main question.
I thought we just were.
No, we didn't. Don't go away. Welcome back to the SBS Cycling Podcast. Question up in the air, Micah. How do you beat Pogacar when you look at the season that he's had? He's been winning at the beginning of it, in the middle of it, and at the end of it. He won pretty much everything that he wanted to win, almost.
Yeah.
Even if he didn't win it, he was in the podium, or I can't remember what his worst result, but he's like six or something.
You outlast him, and you know what I mean by that is you wait until he retires.
Yeah.
Because at the moment, it's a broken record, but I think he's the best of the best.
Mm-hmm.
I think he is the best of the best. We are witnessing the best cyclist we've ever seen in our sport. You know, it's a big statement. I know that I always say you can't compare errors, but I just think we have to because he's rewriting the history books the way he wins. And what I mean by that is he wins Flanders. The Tour de France winner or champion does not win Tour of Flanders in the year 2025, except if your name is Tadej Pogacar.
Yeah, you're second in Roubaix.
He's phenomenal. He's phenomenal. So. And Marianne Vos, you know, we say is the GOAT, and she is. Rightly so. And we say she's at the back end.
You don't
she's
go with disagree.
But. Yeah, yeah. Well, she's at the back end of her career, Mariana, so it's not fair for me to say this comment, but she can't win the Tour de France. Maybe if it was around 10 years ago, maybe Vos could have.
Yeah, but she was a different rider back then. Yeah. Now she's more of a sprinter.
Yeah.
Which is, I think the difference with her is just her longevity in the sport. Like the fact that she was winning, I don't know, like almost 20 years ago.
Yeah.
And now is still winning. It's just insane.
So in the award for, the greatest, maybe she'll outlast Pog.
Yeah. I don't think Pog's going to last super long in his career. Like he's already tiring. So.
But he's already mentioned LA Olympics.
Mm. Yes.
It's kind of a nice little goal to finish with. So that's an interesting one. It's been 18 minutes and I haven't really spoken about Paul Sexas.
Yeah, come on. Wow.
I've done well.
You've jumped off. Julien's in the scrap heap now.
Julien, but come on. Like, look at what we...
He's behind a glass cabinet, Julien.
Yeah, exactly.
In case of emergency.
He's in the pool room.
Yeah, exactly.
But hey, Paul Sexas, we mentioned him earlier on this year. We spotted him. 19. He just turned 19. He's a bronze medal at the European Championship. Best French at the World Championship. He's sitting on the podium with someone that is four-time winner of the Tour de France. Next to him is four-time world champion, and he's 19.
You know what I love? His post-race
interviews
comment was, he said, he said, I'm in shock. I can't believe it. He said, I didn't even pack a finish bag.
No, exactly. He was in the shoes.
I didn't think I'd finish.
There's a funny photo on the podium where they're all in their trainers and all wrapped up, and he forgot his bag.
He's still wearing his race kit.
Yeah, he was on the race kit.
that's cool.
But joke aside, no, we talk about, you know, they're all up and coming, and you can't predict the future. But we had a good discussion with Kino in the watch along on what do the French and Decathlon do? Do they seize the moment, seize the energy and race him? Or do they protect him a bit? What should they do for the future?
It's a really good question. I don't think anyone... Is it fair to say, Grace, I don't think anyone knows the answer to that because we see such young riders defy the odds. 10 years ago, you would have said, no, mm-hmm. you know, cotton wool, let him develop. Whereas now I tend to say, test the waters. Don't race him, 100 race days a year, but be strategic. Is that a fair?
Yeah, I would think you want to give a range of experience. Some races have him as a leader, mm-hmm. because he's obviously capable, but then also have a lot of races that he does without the pressure of being a leader. So it's it's not every time he goes to a race, he has that huge expectation, because mm-hmm. it's a lot when you're young and you haven't done it a lot. Yeah. There's no right answer.
Vaucler was pretty adamant, saying he actually broke the mold because the team wanted to protect him a bit.
Mm.
They didn't bring him to the Tour de France, where a lot of people think he probably would have been good for him to expose himself to the Tour de France. And the team sort of, behind closed door, asked Vaucler not to select him. And Vaucler was like, why not? Because a one-day race or two-day race won't kill him.
Yeah.
So he just went and did it.
And I totally agree with that. I agree with Vaucler. Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
I'm glad we're...
It's exciting. the whole decathlon, we've sort of touched on it. And we've been talking about it just ourselves, at the Tour de France and everything that's happening there. The big funding they're getting, huge change. We're hearing rumours of not just we know riders changes, mm-hmm. but staffing. Mm-hmm. There's been a massive shake up. It is no longer the French centric team that
Absolutely
we'll see
not,
next
yeah.
year.
And it's quite interesting because in the same moment you've got Arkea fighting for survival because they've got no money. But they went very French, Arkea.
Yeah.
It's one of these French licenses that they went very French. So, and it's going to be hard for them to pull this one out of the bag.
Yes.
They may actually fold at the end of the month. We're talking 2 weeks.
Yeah, it doesn't look good, does it? Which is a shame. It is a shame.
Absolutely. In terms of the calendar on our cycling, let's go back to Il Lombardia. It's something that Tadej Pogacar, can we say, is mainly the favourite for this one to lose?
I think any race...
I make myself laugh as well.
Let's talk about it.
If he's on the start list, then yes, he just needs to show up to a race to be the favourite.
Mm-hmm. In terms of the success that UAE had also this year, this would be another one where they would go even further from away from the second on the ladder of number of wins. Lombardia, you talked about that race just all around, but how different of a race is this, and why is Pogacar could make a difference here again and again and again?
I think it's... it's a hard race. It's, mm-hmm. It's a lot of climbing. It's not, I don't think it's got as much as Liège, Bastogne-Liège for the men.
No.
But it's up there. He has won it four times.
Yes, exactly.
Just checking. Yes. He's won Liège three. He's won Lombardia four. So they're similar sort of types of races in terms of the climbing. And just the way, I guess, he has spaced his season out over the, last 5 years, Lombardia works for Pog. Not all riders it does in terms of, how they plan it. They might be too tired or worn out. So it's just, it's hard to beat him when he's obviously still got great form. How many race days has he had this year, Pog? That's the other thing to consider. He's had 48 days. It's not small, is it? It's not large, but it's not small.
It's pretty solid.
Yeah.
But, majority of those are in the Tour.
Yeah, true. 21 there. So there's half his race days.
Yeah, yeah.
And the others are all pretty big ones.
And he got bought for half of that as well. So.
Yeah.
So, absolutely. Okay, so Il Lombardia is one to watch for Pogacar. Who else can do anything?
Well, Remco will be there.
Remco
will
be there.
Remco is his last big chance.
Yeah, but it's interesting one as well, because let's also remember Remco had a pretty rubbish start of the year. He was injured late last year. So him performing so well, coming back towards the end of the season, are you surprised, Grace, by this performance late in this year, or is it sort of normal because he had this?
Yeah, I think slow often start. When you have a slow start, then it leans towards having mm-hmm. quite a strong finish to the season. And we saw, he was great at the Tour and then has just sort of held his form since then. So, mm-hmm. I'm not surprised.
Okay.
his last year's results, by the way, Pog won, of course. Remco was second at 3 minutes and 16 seconds. Ciccone was on the podium at 4 minutes and 31. And then Yonny Zagirda was fourth at 4:34. And yeah. he sort of led in a group of riders. So if Remco can improve...
By 1 minute,
he's winning. He's going in the right direction.
But it's quite interesting just to come back to the discussion we had about the late part of the season. Those races are hard on the body over the year. The European Championship, something we haven't mentioned, 17 riders finished the main race. Only 17.
17.
Only 17.
What was the distance?
But there weren't that many starters.
It was up there. It was longer. Plus, yeah.
There were only like 95 starters. So
yeah.
Okay. I guess, yeah. I don't know if either of you can do some quick maths because 30 out of 165 finished Worlds.
Right.
17 out of around 95.
Yeah, so, yeah. Okay. So that's actually fairly, that's fairly similar. Mm-hmm. Percentage. Yeah. Percentage-wise, yeah.
Any other news? There's some transfer news that are very interesting.
Well, there's one I want to talk about a little bit, and maybe I'm, you know, jumping all over this a bit too much, but Kjaan Uyttebroeks. Mm-hmm. Remember, he was the Belgian. He was with Visma or Jumbo Visma back, you know, a few years ago now. Got a bit messy. He exited that deal and they announced Bora Hansgrohe at the time. And that had some legal wrangling that they had to sort out. Anyway, it all worked out. He went across to Red Bull. Still got 2 years left on the contract. Just announced he's tearing up that contract, mutual agreement. They both seem fairly happy and complimentary of each other in his exiting. He now goes to Movistar, 4-year deal. He's young. Mm. He's still really young. But 4 years, to me, I can't help but question Movistar. Have they pulled the trigger a bit too quickly on a 4-year deal for a guy that I think, yeah, he's talented. Yeah, he has ran top 10 in a Grand Tour. But a 4-year deal when he's exited two teams early on contracts.
Yeah, you need to look at the pattern there and think, well,
yeah.
Yeah, there's something not quite right about this guy.
Yeah, I'm not saying don't sign him to Movistar, but 4 years. That's a huge investment,
isn't it?
It's a
big commitment.
Yeah.
And yeah, especially when he's, you know, had some poor exits with, well, I mean, they say that it's been mutual and whatever with Bora Hansgrohe, but
you don't break a contract like
but
this.
But like, if they wanted him, they'd you know, have him stay.
Yeah,
so, it could be the upcomings of Remco and so on that didn't want him around as well.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah,
there's the national thing.
I find it interesting.
Mm. So there could be a national thing where Remco was like, "Hey, I know this guy from a." From early on racing and stuff, I can't stand him.
Oh, there's plenty of things, you know, behind closed doors that I'm sure we're not privy to. We've heard our own little
rumors.
Was
Landa in the same pattern? Landa moves several teams in several years. Despite having contracts, he broke contracts several times.
He might have. I mean, probably the difference with Landa, you know, and look, he was talked up as a potential Grand Tour winner. He has still delivered. Landa, you know, he's podiumed, he's ran fourth, fifth, you know, he's ran multiple top tens. There's people that'll criticise Landa and say, oh, he hasn't lived up to it. Well, he didn't say he was going to win a Grand Tour, or maybe he did. but I think he's delivered. Whereas Uyttebroeks at such a young age, unproven thus far.
And the things to watch out in terms of the transfer for the next few weeks as well is how many teams will compress, how many teams will be surviving, like we mentioned. It's a big shake-up in the men's, less in the women's. There's a bit less happening in that transfer market, although there's some teams like Ceratizit that are folding at the end of the month, actually. So it's a bit less chaotic.
Yeah, there's not been like too many big transfers because there were a lot of star riders that moved teams last year. So yeah, I think there's been movement, but it's like not been headline sort of transfers. So I think it's fairly stable in the women's side this year.
Can I ask, I'm putting you on the spot a little bit, just with all of that and the economy of the women's sport and obviously the Cyclists Alliance that you're heavily involved with, what's the one thing you'd love to see sort of shift in the next 12 months in the women's peloton? You know, that it will be obviously a positive impact. It doesn't have to be a big thing. It might be a small thing. But can you pinpoint something that you go, this really needs to, you know, shift here, or the direction needs to go in that way?
Yeah, I mean, there's all sorts of things, but my mind goes to like the health topic and especially just, you know, female health compared to male. Like the sport is very traditional, and they sort of treat the female riders a bit like small men. And I think just like appreciating that we're different, and especially with the relative energy deficiency that sort of became a hot topic after the Women's Tour de France. Like, I would like to see, I know that the UCI is working on some education. They don't really want to standardize any like medical regulations on it, but I think just a little bit more progressive, like up-to-date medical knowledge would make a huge difference in the...
Does that start with the teams, though, instead of the regulation side of
it? Well, yes, but there's a lot of teams that, depending on the culture of the team, like Italian medicine, for example, is very, like, stuck in the 90s.
Yep. And mentalities...
Yeah.
I think I know where you're alluding to. Yep.
So there's some teams that are doing great on this front, but then there's others that aren't. So I think just having like some holistic like best practice would go a long way.
That's good answer.
Yeah.
Good answer.
It's a big subject we can talk in the in between season as well, because we can look into this. I think it's would be interesting. Anything else, Micah, that you got on your list that you made in your 24-hour flight?
I did my homework, yes. No. One transfer, Ricarda Barenfeind, who's one of my faves, and she won a stage of the Tour a couple of years ago. I've talked about it previously. She hasn't had a great year. She's been injured. She did the Tour, but she has just signed a 2-year deal with Lidl Trek. Mm-hmm. So that's exciting, I think. I think she can be really good. She leaves Canyon Tram. I think that's a really good move.
Yep.
She's still very young. She's she's got the best ahead of her, the young German. Handlebar Gate.
Oh, yeah.
Another one. Is this still ongoing?
Well, during the World Championships, the UCI announced like a whole lot of decisions that had been made by the management committee, and one of them was that they've revised the measurement for the handlebars. So it's now the minimum is like 40 centimetres for measuring from the like outside to outside of the bar, which gives quite a bit of...
That's a minimum.
Yeah.
Right.
So you riders can have their hoods quite a bit closer together.
Yep.
Than the like first draft of the regulation had. So I think everyone's sort of happy about this now.
Is it disturbing though, in terms of, is it disturbing your training? Is it disturbing the way you prepare for next year, not knowing how it is? Or is it you adapt pretty quickly?
Well, I mean, I think the teams maybe were starting to think like, well, how are we going to deal with changing all the equipment? But I don't know if like they actually would have played, but it would have been interesting to get to the start of next year and seen like, do the teams actually implement this rule or not? Because everyone was against it.
Well, what was alarming, I think the biggest thing that was alarming about this is it's as if the UCI forgot that women actually rode, that were in professional cycling. That was what was so alarming. It was just like, oh, yeah, it's just a rule and it's men. And then it's like, well, hang on a minute, actually. And it's this sort of, in a real obscure way, is related to what you were just saying about mental health, holistic sort of approach. And that was just it was a pretty poor example of the UCI, a real oversight, wasn't it?
When was the last time we praised them? I don't know.
we give them praise when they deserve it.
Exactly.
I'm just scratching my head.
Yeah. There are women in the UCI, but it just goes to show that when men are making decisions.
Mm.
They just don't consider some things that are really obviously, if like, will affect women in a different way.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Anything else?
One more thing I've got. Alexander Kristoff.
Yes, he, retiring.
Yeah, retiring. He, had to, he abandoned the last race. I think he was doing Tour de Lankau. He had a pretty nasty crash. So pretty much that calls curtains on his career. He's worth a mention because he won two monuments, Milan-San Remo, Tour of Flanders, Yellow Jersey, four stages of the Tour, Wevelgem. He's been in the World Tour, talk about longevity, since 2011. Wow. He was an elite rider before that on smaller teams, but World Tour since 2011. So, yeah, great career.
Chapeau.
That's strong. And I did see a video of, it must have been because he'd crashed and couldn't ride his bike. You know how they do at the last race? Oh, they put all the wheels up and and the retiring rider comes through, but he was taken through on like a tuk-tuk.
Love it. Love it.
Nice.
Cool. Yeah. That's great.
Well, thank you for joining us. Thank you for coming back.
Yes, Michael. Good to be back.
We will be there next week. This was your last unclip.
Yeah.
That was a good experience. I loved listening to them. happy with the results?
Yeah, no, it was fun doing that. And I, you know, received some good feedback from people that listened along. And it'll feel weird next Monday not to think of what I'm going to say.
Just talk to yourself in front of the mirror. I do it all the time.
Problem, yeah. No problem. But I'm sure you will be back for season two of the Unclip next year. We'll be back on Friday for the news flash as well. Until then, it's bye for now.